Sup, you beautiful bastards. Hope you're having a fantastic Tuesday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're gonna talk about today is why we had Piers Morgan and Daniel Craig in the news. And the reason for that is it appears Piers Morgan decided to take a break from criticizing women like Emily Ratajkowski for showing off their bodies and decided to take aim at Daniel Craig. And how he did that is he posted this photo of Daniel Craig with the caption, "Oh, 007, not you as well. Hashtag papoose, hashtag emasculated Bond." And what followed was a lot of criticism of Piers Morgan, but also one of the biggest takeaways was, why do you care? With Chris Evans, aka Captain America, tweeting, "You really have to be so uncertain of your own masculinity to concern yourself with how another man carries his child. Any man who wastes time quantifying masculinity is terrified on the inside." You also had Kate Irby tweeting, "Imagine believing carrying your own baby in public is emasculating," which Piers Morgan responded, "He's not carrying it, that's my point. He's using an emasculating papoose. James Bond would never use a papoose to carry his babies." He then went on to quote tweet someone who was carrying their kid on his shoulders, writing, "There you go, a proper dad," to which people pointed out, "You can't really do that with a baby whose neck is just gonna be flailing around." And then in general, what followed were a ton of dads sharing pictures of them carrying their babies like this. And as far as my personal takeaway from this, one, I don't even know if Piers Morgan actually has this opinion. My takeaway from Piers Morgan is that he says something, he rides that outrage wave, and then he moves on to the next thing. And if you look to his Twitter over the past day and a half, it kind of seems to be the case. He said this thing, he got a massive reaction, he realized it, he leaned into it. He has continued, but now is kind of getting minimal return, retweets are less, likes are less. Now, as far as anyone that would actually question or criticize a man's masculinity based off of how they are caring for their children, that reeks of insecurity, and it's also the reason one of the most liked and retweeted responses to Piers Morgan is a side-by-side comparison of he and Craig. And three, I personally have the belief that it is incredibly masculine to care for your child, however you care for your child. I have also used a baby holder like this in the past just to allow me to be a person while also being a father. Sometimes it was so I could continue to work or do things around the house, and other times because I wanted to, you know, play a little Celeste. And in addition to that, whether you want to call it more masculine or just you being more whole as a person, I think it's incredibly powerful to not give a fuck what other people think you look like, especially when it involves caring for your children. But that said, this is the PDS, that's the story, my personal takeaway, and I pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts around all of this? And then let's talk about our douchebag of the day, Alexandra Damien. And I know some of you are gonna be like, how is Piers Morgan not the douchebag of the day? Oh, Alexandra is on a different level. Alexandra's in the news today because she was just sentenced to 2 years, although 18 months suspended, for fraud and perjury stemming from the 2015 Paris attacks. Those attacks, of course, the ones that left 130 dead. After the attacks, she reportedly went to social media, posted a photo of a scar that she said was from one of the weapons of the attackers. It was also reportedly found that she took over $23,000 that were meant for the victims of this attack, as she also received therapy sessions at a hotel in Normandy paid for by the French Association of Terror Victims. But it turned out while she had plans to go out to the bar that night, she changed those plans and was not actually a victim of the attack. And ultimately, she ended up admitting this in court, asking for forgiveness, and so she's going to get 6 months in prison. And it's so disgusting that someone would do this that I don't even know what to say to convey what I'm feeling. Something truly horrible happened to so many people, friendships lost, families broken, a whole nation scarred. And this person uses this as an opportunity to cash grab money that is meant for the victims and someone that used this horrible tragedy as a way to make the story about them. That is, I don't have the words. And so before I use some that I regret, That's where I'm gonna end this one. And then let's talk about two different sides of outrage in Trump world. On one side, there's outrage against T.I., who posted on Twitter, "Dear 45, I ain't Kanye." And with it, it has a video that starts with the President of the United States leaving. There's a voiceover that mentions Melania Trump's not going with Trump this weekend. And then it cuts to T.I. in the Oval Office with a Melania Trump lookalike. She has that "I really don't care, do you" jacket. She takes it off, she's naked, among other things, she dances for T.I. This has resulted in a spokeswoman for Melania Trump, Stephanie Grisham, calling for a boycott of T.I.'s music, also tweeting, "How is this acceptable?" Although what I will say is most likely that is just going to draw more attention to T.I. and probably result in more streams and sales of his music. And on the other side of outrage in Trump world, you had people angry at Donald Trump. And this in part is related to how Donald Trump decided to celebrate a judge dismissing the defamation suit that Stormy Daniels had against him. Trump tweeting, "Federal judge throws out Stormy Daniels' lawsuit versus Trump. Trump is entitled to full legal fees." He then sources Fox News and adds, "Great, now I can go after Horseface and her third-rate lawyer in the great state of Texas. Texas. She will confirm the letter she signed. She knows nothing about me, a total con. To which Stormy Daniels responded in a quote tweet, "Ladies and gentlemen, may I present your president. In addition to his, shortcomings, he has demonstrated his incompetence, hatred of women, and lack of self-control on Twitter again, and perhaps a penchant for bestiality. Game on, Tiny." And you had a lot of people expressing disgust, saying the president is once again taking a swing at a woman's looks. Although what I would say on that note, whether you think it's right or wrong, I think this is another situation that doesn't really move the needle either way. So there's that. Also a note with this situation is this is only one piece of the puzzle. The lawsuit about the alleged hush money involving Daniels, Cohen, and Trump, that's still ongoing. But actually, a question I want to toss your way with these stories. The reason I feel like I ultimately try and go to, does this move the needle at all, is I don't know if anything does anymore. I feel like, and I don't know if it's just because what is the loudest and what we see the most are kind of the most extreme of people, but it feels like 95% of things don't matter anymore and everyone's just on their team. And I don't know if I'm just being a cynic there, because I am someone that in the past has talked about, I feel like there are extremists that are slowly working their way towards the middle and they're the loudest, and you know, we have to think about the people in the middle. But honestly, I question how true that is now. And so with that said, I do want to pass that question off to you, and I'm fascinated to hear what you think. And then let's talk about this situation out of China, which to understand, I need to give you a little background. There's this group called the Uyghurs, which is a group of around 11 million Turkic Muslims that live in Western China's Xinjiang region. And there, they make up approximately 45% of the population. And in recent decades, there has been a mass migration of Han Chinese into the region, which has caused many Uyghurs to feel like their culture and livelihood are threatened. But of course, this is over a long period of time, but then something notable happens in August. Back in August, the United Nations said that they had received credible reports that 1 million Muslim Uyghurs were being held in re-education camps. And according to a UN human rights panel, this camp appeared to be a massive internment camp that is shrouded in secrecy. And these claims were backed by groups like Human Rights Watch, who claim that people with relatives in 26 sensitive countries like Indonesia, Kazakhstan, and Turkey had been rounded up. And in fact, they, along with anyone who had used WhatsApp to contact someone abroad. Other reports claim that some Uyghurs were detained for wearing long beards and face veils or sharing Islamic holiday greetings on social media. And you had human rights groups claiming that the people in these camps were being detained against their will, forced to learn Mandarin, swear loyalty to President Xi Jinping, and criticize or renounce their faith. Also, along with those, there are reports of torture, and according to one former prisoner, "They wouldn't let me sleep. They would hang me up for hours and would beat me. They had thick wooden and rubber batons, whips made from twisted wire, needles to pierce the skin, pliers for pulling out the nails. All these tools were displayed on the table in front of me, ready to use at any time. And I could hear other people screaming as well." Another former prisoner saying those who disobeyed the rules, refused to be on duty, engaged in fights, or were late for studies were placed in handcuffs and ankle cuffs for up to 12 hours. Along with all of this, you also have reports claiming that Uyghur people live in a constant state of surveillance, with claims that the government uses facial recognition cameras and QR codes on people's doors so officials can check who's inside. There are also reports that people are made to undergo biometric testing. But on the other side of this, you have China denying these allegations, saying that the Uyghurs had full rights, but, quote, "those deceived by religious extremism shall be assisted by resettlement and re-education." And here you have China claiming that the region in question faces a serious threat from Islamic extremists and separatists, alleging that violent incidents were orchestrated by Uyghur extremists. In 2013, a car was driven into Tiananmen Square, killing 5 people, which was allegedly done by Xinjiang separatists. In 2017, you had ISIS releasing a video that directly threatened China, showing Uyghur Muslims training. In the video, one of the men threatened they would, quote, "shed blood like rivers and avenge the oppressed." But despite the evidence of some joining the Islamic State, human rights groups claim that the violence stems from China's oppression of the people in the region. Now, with all of that said, that brings us to some of the recent moves. Earlier this month, China legalized vocational skill education training centers that would, quote, "carry out anti-extremist ideological education and implement, quote, psychological and behavioral correction to promote thought transformation of trainees and help them return to society and family." The law also states that those being educated and converted should also learn Mandarin. Also today, we saw a state-controlled news agency publish an interview with Shorat Zakir. He's the chairman of the government of Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. And in that interview, Zakir, who is Uyghur himself, is quoted as saying that since the 1990s, the region has been plagued by terrorism, extremism, and separatism. And in response, quote, "Xinjiang has also stressed addressing the root cause of terrorism and moved to bring around, educate, and save the majority of those who committed petty crimes through assistance and education to prevent them from becoming victims of terrorism and extremism." Zakir is also quoted as saying that some of the people in the region are particularly vulnerable to extremism because they do not know Mandarin and therefore struggle to find work. And so all of that is essentially the basis used for the creation of the vocational education and training programs that the new law creates. And according to the interview, these programs begin with lessons on Mandarin and Chinese history, then they learn about Chinese laws, and then they are given vocational training. And also adding that these institutions respect and protect the customs and habits of various ethnic groups and their beliefs in diet and daily life, saying those in the program get nutritious free diets, that they have dorms that have air conditioners, TVs, and showers, saying they organize contests on speech, writing, dancing, singing, and sports. Zakir is also quoted as saying, "through vocational training, most trainees have been able to reflect on their mistakes and see clearly the essence and harm of terrorism and religious extremism," and adding they have also been able to better tell right from wrong and resist the infiltration of extremist thought. However, you still have the China Director for Human Rights Watch, Sophie Richardson, saying that Zakir's interview fails to address many of the concerns. This, including among others, mass arbitration military detention, pervasive restrictions on religious freedom, and repression. And so that is essentially the situation as far as what happens next. In an early November meeting of the United Nations Human Rights Council, members will have a chance to question Chinese officials about the detention program and other intrusive security measures affecting Muslim minorities. And so with that coming up, you have some feeling that these recent moves by China are an attempt to justify what's happening, which could be the case. As far as international action, there really hasn't been much, although there have been some critical statements. On Monday, you had Nikki Haley, the current U.S. ambassador to the U.N., saying, "In China, the government is engaged in the persecution of religious and ethnic minorities that is straight out of George Orwell," and adding, "It is the largest internment of civilians in the world today." But as I just said, it's a critical statement, but we're not really seeing many moves being made. And so ultimately, that is where we are with this story right now. We're gonna have to wait to see what else comes out, either from the questioning or outside of it. But with that said, I do want to pass the question off to you. Do you believe China's explanation here? Or you have the mindset that China is using outlier acts of violence as a way to completely crack down on an entire group of people? And in addition to that response, do you feel like there should be an international response to this? Any and all thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. And that's where I'm going to end today's show. And of course, remember, I want to hear your thoughts on these stories. So whether it be the last story, the first one, anything in between, let me know what you're thinking in those comments down below. Also, while you're at it, if you like these daily dives into the news, hit that like button. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button to make sure you don't miss new ones. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.